But I know he's in Halloween, and that's
She's
fun.
She's really pretty.
I'd have to look again. I'd have to look again. I just, everybody thinks I'm him at shows, and are you the real one?
You better watch yourself.
They always ask if I'm Captain Spaulding. I say, well, yeah, I'm Captain Spaulding. But then they ask if I'm Sid Haig, and I said no. Although I could probably make extra money if I just said yes.
There you go.
But then I'm sure then I'd probably end up in court with.
Yeah, right.
Well, I got his signature because I did a portrait of him. It's like a P and a C or something. It's like some hieroglyphics or something. I don't know what it is.
A P and a C makes no sense. Neither one of those letters are in his name at all, by the way. Neither one.
Yeah, it was really weird. Well, Suzanne's back, too.
Yeah.
She's this mom, anyway.
Oh, geez.
Our star has returned.
Yeah, it may look silly.
Okay. Don't say anything cool until Richard leads us back in, or he'll get mad at us.
I wanted pretty hair, but I don't get to have pretty hair. That's just too bad.
Me neither. I wanted it. It didn't happen this lifetime.
Well, I have just fixed a cocktail, so I'm good to go.
Comic Pop Visits, brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
Lenny,
Jonathan,
and we are back with Suzanne Lambden, the author of the Dead Hearts series. Her latest book in the series is Defiant Hearts. You can pick that up at any online distributor, or you can probably get them at the, I don't know, there's Hastings over there. I don't know what all this Barnes & Noble still around.
Yes.
Okay.
go to a bookstore.
It seems like bookstores are dying.
Turn off your computer and go to a bookstore and look at books, please.
You know, I want to get on that library list. There's a list that librarians have, and so for them, for all their different schools, they get on the list, look at the top 20 books, and then schools will order those books. KSU, I just did Little Apple Comic Con and in Manhattan, and the KSU librarian came up and he was supposed to purchase the books, and I've not heard from him since. I wonder if he found out it was an OU alumni and not a Wildcat after all. So he said, screw her. You know, we don't want her books here in our university. So,
well, yeah, I'm really screwed then.
I'd like to be in more libraries. I went and donated my books to Wichita Public Library. I guess people don't donate, authors don't come in and donate books to them. Which, hey, I've got no problem. As long as people are going to read me, you want the damn book, I'll give it to you. I just want to be read. It's not about fame and fortune. I just want you to read it, like it, and talk to me about it.
That's a wonderful outlook. Right. And, I mean, there's a lot to be said for that. You know, I realize that everyone has to make a living on this planet to live. But when you're a writer, you know, like... Really, I think I don't, and it's hard not to because I'm so not rich. We're going to call it not rich. You know, but like, I really just, all I care about is people reading. Like, I just want them to read. And like, it's really hard not to give stuff away. In fact, for the first 2 years that I was writing, to keep myself motivated more than anything, I put my story on Facebook and just like, as I wrote it, put the rough draft up there. And I later removed it because then as I was drafting, I was like, God, this is terrible. And I figured, I felt like everyone out there in library or TV land was, sorry, I messed that up. Everybody out there in TV land was laughing at me. But you know, it's just like, I just loved the, you know, the few comments I got and likes and stuff like that. It was, I literally lived off that for 2 years while I was single and depressed and living with my mom. And
you know, that's not a bad idea. One of my favorite authors is a guy by the name of David Wellington, and he writes zombie books, vampire books, werewolves. But he started out with a website, and I think his one of his books, like Zombie Nation, but there's like a trilogy, and then this guy's written, I don't know, 9 to 12 books now. But he had an internet site, and he would put out chapter one, and then fans would come in and they would tell him what they wanted to see in chapter two. And he wrote his first book that way, and then he got picked up by a publisher, and he goes to comic cons. And David Wellington, love this man. But I thought, what a wonderful way to write. Your fans are responding to you, and then you're writing kind of your story based on what they want to see, or maybe what they don't want to see. So, you know what, Lenny, it's not a bad way, really, to get your stories out there. I'm all for that. And you know what? And I'm all for fan fiction. I love fan fiction. I think if you're a writer and you're a serious writer, to really be read, get your work out there. It's all about not being afraid of rejection, not being afraid of someone saying, I just read your story. It's shit. I don't like it. Hey, good for you. Glad you read it. Too bad you didn't like it. Yeah, not my problem. It's already in your head now. So, but you know, that's really what it's really about. It's just being read. It's not about being money, making, it is about making money. You'd like to make money only because you want to keep writing.
Exactly. But, yeah, it's like you got to feed the animal. I happen to be the animal, but you know, like you really, and I have three kids too, and they're still too young to take care of me, so I'm going to have to feed them for a while.
Suzanne, towards the end of the first part of the interview, you were mentioning how you were going to help young developing...
She was lying. No, I'm just kidding.
No, absolutely not.
how you were going to help young developing
writers. Nations. No, sorry.
I was wondering if I could throw a couple ideas at you and see what you think.
Absolutely love it. Yeah.
Go.
You're going to do it now? You're going to do it now?
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Email her later.
Yeah, if you want to send me ideas or class. Talk about them. Yeah. I do a lot of panels when I go to Comic Cons, and one of the panels I do is how to write your first novel.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one I like to do, too, is The Cure for Writer's Block, which I'm just, since I mentioned that, I'm just going to toss this out right now so you know, is when a fellow's got writer's block, it's not that you can't write. It's what you're writing about right now is not working. So don't write that particular scene or that particular character. Write about something else or someone else. You can either stay in the story you're writing and just come up with a brand new character, and then you know you're writing something good when, you know, suddenly you've written 10 pages and it's just flowing from you, as opposed to staring at the blank screen and nothing's coming out of my head. Well, quit thinking about that character. That character is not working and has no story to tell. That character might be off having some Starbucks right now and doesn't want to talk to you. So talk to another character. So that's really all writer's block is. It's not that you can't write. You're just writing about the wrong character at that particular moment in time.
Well, I have a couple of novels started.
Okay.
One's a mystery novel. And one is, well, Lenny and Richard know about this because I'm always talking about it. It's kind of a sci-fi type deal. Actually, Richard has a better term for it. What was it? Dark.
Oh, I usually call it dark fantasy.
Dark fantasy.
That's what I classify horror, because I'm like, really, horror is just fantasy. It's just a darker fantasy.
It is.
So that's kind of where I come from it with.
In a mystery novel, when would you like reveal like the murderer?
At the end.
when am I revealing? When you're revealing?
Is this
what
a real
now?
Question? Are you?
Yeah.
Ask
are you punking us
again.
Right now?
No.
Okay.
Go.
When would you like reveal the murderer?
Well, don't tell, or then we won't be able to read any of
your okay,
novels.
So you know what? So unless you've got a twist coming up with the murder, yeah. I'm not. I wouldn't reveal it to the end. And you know, the best mystery writer of all time is Agatha Christie. Mm-hmm. Everybody says that. So I'm not opposed to when you're a young writer, you should be reading a book, your favorite author. So if you're, let's say you're going to write a mystery, you should be reading Agatha Christie and kind of almost, you're not plagiarizing, but you're going to use her formula.
Right.
Right. Every author has a certain formula they use when they write. So Well, if you're going to write a mystery, unless it's unless you got suspense by exposing who the murderer is in a mystery, I wouldn't be right, because you're solving the crime.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the book, right, that's when you would want to expose it. But I don't really write a lot of mystery. But that's would tell people, whatever your genre is, write the best, like Agatha Christie, write like her, Arthur Conan Doyle.
Here was my thought process on doing something like that, because I wanted to portray kind of like what you did with Raph and Cadence and Highbrow.
Rafe,
sorry.
That's all right.
I kind of wanted to have my main character, the detective's point of view, and then the murderer point of view. And that's why I kind of revealed the murderer a little bit earlier. Do you think that would kind of coincide, or...
If you're right,
no, I think, thriller. What was that TV series that was on? And it was Kevin Bacon and James Purefoy. It was on, I don't know if maybe it's still on, but it was James Purefoy is your serial killer and Kevin Bacon is your detective. So you already know going out who the bad guy is.
The following.
Yeah.
The following.
It is still on, too. Yeah.
I think so.
Okay. Because I love me some James Purefoy. And of course, everything leads back to Kevin Bacon. But if it builds the plot overall, revealing that and having that character, then do it. Just each author should be able to find their own formula and what works for you to tell the story, to make it suspenseful, gritty, and interesting, and to get us involved. And if that is not writing like someone else, then don't do it. So if it's to tell the villain's point of view, then tell it. I like telling the villain's point of view because I think it gives a richer overall view of what's going on in the story. I don't always like just snipping out what the main character knows, because after a while, who cares? I'm bored with you already. I want to know, what's the other guy thinking? And unless you're writing about some crazy axe murder serial killer person, sometimes the villain, right, I want you to be sympathetic to that character. I want you to know what their personal journey is, whether it's dark or horrible or not. There is a reason everybody does anything, and I think that's sometimes good to know in a story. So if you can make it work, do it.
Yeah, I tried to I wrote a short story, and this is just I'm just going to tell you about it, because I think that it was the premise was I watched this really old Disney movie.
Oh, that's a horror movie right there.
It was. It really was. It's black and white. I mean, it's super old. I think 1935. I looked it up on and got the information for it, because I actually quote it. But there's a song in it about King, and it's the movie's about King Midas. It's called The Golden Touch. And a character, Goldie, gives him this power. And then, you know, he has to get rid of it because obviously it's ruining his life. And I thought, you know, that's you know, I just kind of came up with this idea. I was like, what if it wasn't gold? You know, what if it was something terrible? And so I wrote a story about a guy who touched something when he was young. And because he touched that thing, his hand is slowly turning to stone. And the only way he can stop it and actually, to a point, reverse the process is by basically forcing his stone into someone else. And basically, it's like a virus. It spreads that way. Yeah, I know. Quit being perverted, Richard. It's much more tastefully written than I just explained it.
It follows.
Oh, God. It's not that slow. Trust me. It's much better. Jerk. It Follows is a really terrible horror movie. Don't watch it. Or do. And then we can talk about how it's not good. yeah. So anyway, and the whole idea was, this guy is the villain of my story. He does very many nefarious things, and he is ultimately, I mean, it's I'm probably never going to release it or anything. He's killed, he's defeated, but the curse isn't. And the whole idea of it was, you know, make somebody as nefarious and evil looking as possible, and also to an extent evil, because he's looking for victims every day to you know, passes, and basically he's like Medusa. He turns people completely to stone whenever he. So anyway, it was just a short story. And the whole idea was that, you know, when he died, you know, did you have empathy for him? Because basically, like, you know, he was cursed. He had no choice. It was either die himself, just let himself turn to stone completely, or do this to people. And then the really exciting part for me was at the end, I just had this moment of clarity where this young, beautiful, very romantically complicated heroine from the story is the one that's afflicted with his curse. Plus, she's pregnant. And so now she has the stone hand.
The Stone Hand. Oh, yeah. I actually like that.
That's what it's called. But yeah, I wrote it a while ago, submitted to a contest, lost. Screw them. But
you know what? I don't like contests.
I don't either. By the way,
I'm all about no rejection, right? And if you want to be independent author, right, and you publish your own works, do that, because it's bullshit at this age to be rejected. Why would you put yourself through that? So,
and the thing is that, you know, as far as the publishing industry goes, they're, you know, everyone's getting rejected. Like they're making it their mission to for rejection. Like they're trying so hard to put a dividend between what is professionally published and what's published, self-published or independently published, that basically, like, pretty much, like, you know, like, literally nothing, I feel like is really making it through. What is being produced professionally by the major companies, I think, is all becoming very, like, you know, if it's not a big name already, then it's something that's you know, very rare and very lucky anymore. And I've actually read a series that you're probably familiar with recently that was basically given, that gave a pass to a professional publisher because the crap deal they were being given. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about, Suzanne. And I'm reading this series and I'm like, bullshit, this thing could be worldwide if the publishing industry would wake up and look at what these guys have here. And because they basically had already taken it to a publisher and they were given this shit deal that they couldn't accept. Yep. You know, and that's, well, that's the way they told me the story anyway. And so the thing is like, you know, if they in that quality of a series that's that's far into completion was given that kind of a crap deal, like, yeah, pretty much after I met them, I decided that, you know, the only real way I'm ever going to do anything is just doing it, and forget the damn critics and forget the publishers and forget the agents and just do it.
I've got no use for them.
Yeah, they're really becoming useless. They're killing themselves off. It's really sad.
With your path, Suzanne, go into a little bit of your, you're kind of a independent self-publisher, but go into the path of how you have to do your PR, where you go, how you do it, and kind of tell everybody how that is for you. And that's part of one of your big deals with being an author right now.
It is. I started out being indie. I went to Create Space on Amazon.com, but before everybody suddenly runs out there and spends, you can spend, there's like a tier, spend $1,000 if you've already got your book cover and it's edited properly, and then they'll format it for you. You can do it for free if you know everything and you're so brilliant. One of my friend, Audra Krebs, she went through Create Space. She does her own graphics. She did her own cover design, so she didn't spend any money. And so she's published on Amazon.com, and you can buy her books through them. Or you can spend $3,000 and they edit it. But I did, on my second book, when it came out, I did get picked up. So DC McGannon and Michael McGannon with Weverin Speak, the McGannon group, yay, the Monster Guys. So
yay, the Monster Guys.
Yeah, so they're now my publishers. And, you know, I'll tell you right now, the difference between being not published and whether you're self-published or you're published through a publishing house, it's editing. Oh, my God. Please get a good editor. I tell people that you're only as good as your editor. You can be kind of a sucky writer, but you get an editor that can hear your voice and can draw it out and really edit your work. You can be the most wonderful writer there is out there. Maybe I suck as a writer, but the McGannon group, my books are good. They look good because I've got three editors that go through and they comb through this thing. And believe me, when I'm writing a book, I can write a skeleton draft of a novel within 2 weeks. That's 350 pages, and I can write it in 2 weeks. But then I comb through it 10 times, and I'm adding on the history. I'm adding on the information. I'm going through each character. That's another 6 months. And then your editors come in. But you need a good editor. And you really, as an author, you should not be editing yourself. And your dad shouldn't be editing. Now, reading it, your dad can read it and be an alpha reader, and that would be fantastic. And he can tell you if he likes it or not. But you need a professional, a good editor, whether it's a school teacher, a professor, a real editor. You need a real editor to make sure that story looks good before you publish it yourself, or you try to go through the crappy agent to go through the publishing house to see whether or not after 40 rejection letters, I'm going to I got a contract. They're going to publish my book.
And not pay me anything, and they're going to keep all the royalties, and they're going to basically make me, you know, do all the PR myself. And that's pretty much what they're offering.
But you know what? So to be a successful writer, and let's say I'm going to say that I'm a successful writer. I go to one big con every month, and then in the meantime, I might go to smaller cons. But just so you know, so at a small con, you might have 2,000 people show up as opposed to a big con where it's 30,000 plus. I might sell more books at a small con as opposed to a big con, and I can make enough money to pay my bills with one a smaller big con every month. And then so, but I might go to, say, like three cons every month, big, couple of small, maybe a couple of book signings, but I get my butt out there. I get off my ass. I go door to door. I go to bookstores. I go to libraries. I physically hand my books to other human beings. I go back. I have my personal website for Suzanne, and then I yada yada whatever I'm going to say. I have my professional website, so I spit money on both those websites. So I invest in myself, and you do have to have a little bit of money to jump out there and to be a self-published writer. So I started that way. I spent an awful lot of money. I was a paralegal for my dad at a law firm. I'd saved up some money. And with my first book, I spent quite a bit to get it published and then going to book signings and to cons and getting it out there. And when I first published it myself, I had an editor from OU that published it for me. I'll be damned if I didn't have errors in that book, typos. So I'm ready to pull my hair up. Did you know on page 69 there's a typo? You know what? Screw you. Yes, I do know that now that you told me.
Do you want to hear something, Suzanne?
Yeah,
I recently read Finders Keepers that I rented from this very library for free, and there was an error in it. It was just the wrong word, but it's Stephen King and his 47 editors, and it was of instead of as, and I was like, I wanted to call him. I'm like, somebody paid $30 for this book. There's an error.
I think there always will. You know what? Because it's human error. There will always be at least one typo. I don't care what book you pick up. You're going to find something wrong with it.
I think I think the problem is that people are looking for errors instead of trying to, like...
Enjoy it.
I read the original version of your second book. No, the second book. Forsaken Hearts. I read the original version. We had it here at the library. We've got the new ones now. But I was like, I don't care. I'm a terrible critic anyway. Like, I can either bitch that I hated something because it was obviously for my style trash, like It Follows, as we talk about this movie that none of us liked. I don't know what is technically correct, and I don't really care. If you entertained me, you've done your job, and, like, you know, I mean, the only person I would ever point out error in their book to would be Stephen King. Not even Dean Koontz. But Stephen King, if I got a chance to meet him, I would tell him that in Finders Keepers, in one of the chapters somewhere, he has to find it himself, there is an of that should be as. I know enough about the English language to know that that was not right.
That is funny.
But anyone else, I'm like, it's great. It's great. Was it formatted correctly? I don't know. But I read the original version of that, and you know, there probably were some errors in it. Like you said, you were pulling your hair out, but nothing that stopped me from reading your book. Nothing got me out of the story where I'm like, oh, I can't read this. You know, that was not it at all. There were some, I'm sure, but nothing that, you know, I didn't pull my hair out.
Well, I sure heard about it. I'll tell you that.
And, yeah, you will, because almost no one's like me. I'm really sorry, but it was
funny with Forsaken Hearts. When I published this independently, I actually bought the second book, and I won't say the name, but there was a high profile editor that came and picked me up and wanted to edit book two, and I spent a lot of money, thousands of dollars, for book two to be edited, and it was a line editor. And the difference between a line editor and a copy editor. So a copy editor is going to go in, they're going to look at your typos, make sure your tenses are correct, make sure, you know, just like a copy editor. Is there any misspelled words? They're going to fix things. But a line editor, they come in and they're reading sentence by sentence. Does each sentence make sense? And if you present a problem, did you answer it? Like in, and I'm bringing this right. So like in book two, Dragon, the character has katanas. He gives them to China Six. And she's like, well, where did he get these katanas? Why do these five other girls have these swords? I thought, oh my God, really? This is a problem in the book. And so I had a write in there that he had gone to a museum and that's where he got the damn swords, because I had to answer that question. So it was just the difference with the line editor, but she went in and it was 5 pages to tell me what's wrong with me as a writer, where that you're cheesy, this is fan fiction, your story origin's bullshit, I hate your Worldcraft, in fact, I don't like you, I don't like, so it was 5 pages of trashing me as an author. Well, a new author would read that and they would have cried and they went, I'm not going to write anymore, she didn't like my story. But I looked at it and I thought, this is making sense, because the one thing she said about me is, you're redundant. So I'm redundant? How am I redundant? She goes, in one paragraph, you will, I'm angry, he said, angrily, you know, punching his fist through the wall. And he thought to himself, I'm so angry. And I thought, oh my God. So I say it, I show it, and I think it in the same paragraph conveying, it doesn't have to be angry. That's just what I'm. So I read through the novel. I thought, I'll be damned. I'm redundant. I will say in one paragraph in 3 different waves the same freaking things. And so the line editor does not edit. You go back in and you edit. And I went back in and edited and removed 70 pages of being redundant. And it amazed me because I didn't know that as a writer that I was going to bore you 3 different times to tell you how mad I was, or, you know, boy, that sure is pretty. And whatever it is you're going to use your analysis on it, I didn't know. But she did overall help me, but I spent an awful lot of money for someone to tell me, you suck, you're redundant. But instead of crying about it, because, right, there's no crying in a zombie apocalypse, yada, yada, I used that and I was proactive. And I took that from a positive standpoint, which as a young writer, too, it's so hard to have someone read what you wrote and tell you, I don't like it. Or they suddenly circle everything and show you all your errors and where you're weak as a writer. And I'm not going to write anymore because I'm so bad. But you shouldn't look at it that way. Instead, you take that rejection, you take the bad comments, and you use that to be better. Because being a writer, it's not easy. And not everyone's going to like what you write. But my thought being, if they don't like what I write, go to a library, check something else out. Not my problem. I like what I'm writing. And that's another thing, too. When you're writing something, you should be passionate about it. You should love what you write. And if you can't be as enthusiastic as about the fan that's buying book 2 or book 4, then maybe you shouldn't be writing what you're writing. I had learned long ago, I wrote when The Mummy came out and The Mummy Returns, I wrote The Mummy Reincarnated. And I'm living in LA at that time, and I sent it into Sony Pictures. So my buddy John Schulte, who is with Big Dog Productions, and he produced some of the earlier Ninja Turtle movies, and it's called The Turtle Man out in LA. And so I'll be damned if he didn't contact me, and he goes, Suzanne, you're still writing swashbucklers with sex scenes. What's the matter with you? It's like, why won't you write something with The Mummy Reincarnated, right? And it was a really wonderful story, and it should have been a movie, but Sony Pictures gave it to him, and he read it. Though he was a buddy, he didn't green light it, right? But so he contacted me, and so I'm thinking, okay, so I'm not writing what's popular. I was only, for like 30 years of my life I spent, I'm going to write whatever I write, and if you don't like it, screw you. And so finally I figured out, because I thought otherwise it's kind of prostitution. If I'm going to write what's popular, what everybody wants to read, then I'm selling out. But and you could say maybe I sold out. So The Walking Dead came out. So I kind of clued in. Oh, my God, I like zombies. Maybe I should write about zombies because that's popular. That's what people want to read about. So I thought, well, if I'm going to do that, then I got to make it my own because, well, gee whiz, I don't want to be a prostitute and write about what everybody else is writing about because I sell out, right? So it's just kind of a fine line is writing. You have to find, as a writer, what people really want to read about and then be different about it. Put your own take on it, your own twist. And so, Jonathan, just like with your mystery, if you wanted to have your point of view from your villain, there's no reason why you can't if you build suspense and it builds the overall plot. But just here, I'm going to just blab this at you. When you're writing a book, it's a 3-act play. The problem explodes, we resolve the problem. So within that, that's your overall plot. You have many, many subplots. And so as long as all those things lead up to the main plot, you can do whatever the hell you want to do in a story and make it work. And so I've got it down to a fine science, at least with these Dead Heart series, that I can sit down and I can pump out a 350-page book. I can have 3 to 4 different POV characters. Everybody has their own subplots that are going on, but each chapter and each character overall moves the main plot forward. And once you get that down in your mind, then it works. But just so you know, I've been writing since I was 8 years old. I've written over 30 novels. I've had 4 different agents. I have a file of like 100 different rejection letters. I wrote this romance, and it was it's like in Arizona, and it's all girl horse ranch. And so my gal has a Bowie knife, and she's real tough. And I sent it to a New York City publisher, and they wrote back, and I do not feel sanguine enough about this book to publish it. You have a Crocodile Dundee character walking around in New York in a bikini underwear with a knife. I'm thinking, well, it's not in New York City. It's in Arizona. So I thought at that point, you know what? If you don't like it, don't represent it. You don't feel sanguine enough about it, then don't read it. Don't represent it. I don't care. I'm going to do it myself. But to do it yourself, you really got to figure out what do people really want to read. And then when I'm telling my story, to write it in a way that's appealing, fresh, and different, that gets people excited about what you're writing. And just with zombies, everybody's doing it. So to be different, you toss in a few different genres and you make your delicious salad, and now everybody wants to eat it. Does that make sense? And I kind of went off on a tangent, but I do that.
You're the ones that gave her another hour.
You did.
We did. We did do that.
Hey, you did.
Well, you kind of mentioned that you're going to the cons and everything, going to the smaller ones. You mentioned that you're having people dressing up as your characters. What was your first con where that happened, and what was the experience like for you?
It was wonderful. I'll tell you. So it was AFW. It was here in Wichita. I love anime cons. And so the anime festival in Wichita, Adriana Schoonover was the girl's name. And at that time, she was 16. She came walking in on a Friday dressed as my character, Luna, as a human. She came walking in on Saturday as Luna infected, having been attacked by the werepuma in the mountains. She came back Sunday as a full-on werepuma. And let me tell you, it was so exciting and wonderful to see that anyone gave a damn about the character. But she dressed in all three phases of that character, and it was wonderful. I was really, really happy. And there's nothing more complimentary as an author to have someone dress up as one of your characters. True. It's wonderful.
You got about
one dozen. And I have, I've had Luna, Freeborn, Highbrow, Raven, Dodger. So the five characters, and Rose. There's so much more. And so at Rose. Galaxy Fest, Rose, so six. So my vampire gal. So I've had six different cosplayed actors. I've had in Galaxy Fest, which is in Colorado Springs, there's a group next year that just contacted me, and they're going to be dressing as the characters of my book. Cool. Because Colorado loves me because I love Colorado, and I write about all their every tourist site you can freaking think of in Colorado. I write about it, so they're dressing up as the characters, and I'm excited.
And you're
eating
that'll
all be the really
people.
Cool.
And you're eating. All
and gee whiz,
people.
I could have 40 people, right? Because you said I had 40 characters in book one, so they can all freaking dress up and come.
Well, you've actually also had a young lady, I believe, also do a drawing and coloring of one of your characters. It was Raven. That I saw on your Facebook page. Is she going to continue doing those? And was that like seeing that as represented?
You know what? So you're talking about, so I love fan art. And which one of you drew? Who has the Dead Hearts or the picture you drew a few years ago, Dead Hearts 2?
That was Lenny.
Okay. I want it. I can't wait. I love fan art. It's wonderful. I've got people coming up to me and giving me fan art all the time. It makes me so happy. I don't care how professional it is.
This is one of those clairvoyant moments you were talking about, because actually I drew this heart on just a plain piece of paper, a drawing paper, and I drew some kind of crumbly veins in it, and then the caption in it says, zombies have dead hearts too. And I need to give that to you because I didn't I'd never read your work. I didn't, know anything about it. I just was interested in zombies at the time, and I thought that worked. And I thought, God, she really needs that to kind of promote her work.
I really do. I really do need it.
But I'm thinking because it is very old and I've improved a lot, I will redraw it maybe.
I can't wait. Please do. I'm excited. I want to see it.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
That's just really cool. And and I welcome people too. I would love more people to do fan art and send it to me, whether it's at deadheartsnovel.com or send me at Facebook. And I really want fan stories. I want fan fiction on my series. And so whatever character
is that
you
the dream?
Like.
Is that like what you
that's
consider making
dream.
It? That's the show. Yeah. When other people are taking your characters and writing their own stories,
and
you've won.
Sex with them.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. You've won. Yeah.
Sex with monsters. Yeah.
There you go.
Some of the werewolves. That's when I really made it.
When they're making their girlfriends cosplay as Cadence, then you've made it. Or Luna or Raven or any of them. But yeah,
you know, honestly, I'm also waiting. I want someone to do. I want China Six to come walking in one day. I want all six of those people with dragon and leather with their katanas, and they, because China Six is cool in their book because they always stand in formation, so they're always kind of professional and serious. And I want them just walking in, staying in character the whole time. We're China Six.
My wife.
So yeah.
My wife always says they always got to have that pose, the superhero pose.
I'm really excited. We're actually planning to visit Anime AFW. Fest Wichita this year, so I'm really excited. I've never gotten to go, so I'm hoping I get to go this year.
It was my first con I went to about 3 years ago, and I had never been to a con before, and I've got this, I set up my table as an author. I'm probably one of the few authors that I had the zombie circus. So I don't just have my books out there and a picture of myself and a little bio. I've got zombie paraphernalia, anything you could want. I've got it on my table because it looks cool, right? You want to come up to my table and, oh my God, you've got little zombie toys. Oh my God, you've got a Star Trek script that you wrote for Star Trek. And I look at that, please do. So I'm at AFW and they open the doors and all of a sudden, these things come in, these fuzzy things and weird things and bronies come in, and I grabbed my zombie gun, started shooting them, and it was almost terrifying because I was used to going to zombie crawls, right? And zombies, zombie comes in, it's perfectly natural. I feel very at ease with someone all screwed up. But when those anime folks came in, it was, at first, I thought this one gal was Little Bo Peep. She was not Little Bo Peep. I don't remember who she even was. I should have never even said it. I got in big trouble. But but it was scary, but now I love them. They're so friendly and nice, and they hang out. But anime folks love them. Those are a great bunch of kids. They really, really are. And I laugh. I get a lot of kids that will come up to my table and they start talking to me. And after a while, they go, well, I'm an introvert. I don't normally talk to people. It's like, my God, you haven't shut up since you came up to my table. I would have never known that you were shy or you were an introvert. So I get a big kick out of that, too, because I talk a lot and I'm gregarious. And stop that. I like to talk. But I like to talk to people, and I like to draw. Shy people are some of the most wonderful, intelligent folks, the introverts. I love them. But they come right up, and I would never know. I get into a conversation, and away you go. You just take the time to say something interesting to them, and an introvert will open right up. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Yep.
See?
With the drawings and everything that you've been getting, just looking at it, is there any thoughts of possibly translating this into the comic book form?
I would love to have some graphic novels on my series. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Would love to. I just need to write. I've met a lot of wonderful illustrators, and I've got C.J. Marsh. Is Jonathan. C.J. Marsh is doing some illustrations for me. And before that, I had, who's my illustrator before that? Weston Jones. I would love to have a graphic novel. But you know what? What I'm really going for, I really would like to have a TV series out in Colorado, yes. Out of Springs. My book series would be the most awesome. They could just go with Morbid Hearts and stay, because I started about almost a year after the zombie apocalypse.
Right.
They don't even have to contact me. They could pay me off, write the first series with that first year, right? And then it would be absolutely wonderful. I would love to have graphic novels. I think that would be so cool. Because The Walking Dead have them. They're absolutely wonderful. Which, by the way, I kind of will read a few of The Walking Dead graphic novels, but I don't want to know what's going to happen. I want to be surprised. And then later you'll see people, like this last night, Eugene bit the crotch of whatever the guy's name is. And so then suddenly you've got everyone's, hey, it's from the comic books. So I was really happy about that. So they can kind of please the comic book folks. And then at the same time, still keep it interesting. But yeah, one day I would love to have some comic books. I love it.
Well, I know.
I collect Thor, by the way. And anybody would like to send me some old issues of Thor way back when from the 60s, I'm all for that.
You see my office. You know.
I got a thing for Thor. And I also like female Thor, too, because, you know, a woman with muscles kind of like that, it's kind of hot.
I did have another question a little while ago about the editing process, and it's kind of dated now. It's like from earlier in the interview, but you were talking about getting a professional editor, and I've got some experience with kind of trying to, because when I started writing, I'm not formally educated in any kind of way. So when I started writing, it was just kind of bad grammar and a lot of and then. a lot of like sure. actually writing the word not really, but you know. And I've put my stuff out there a little bit for people to kind of look through and inspect, and I've gotten a lot of good advice, and I have gotten some pretty tough criticism, but also that I've tried to kind of be thick-skinned about and just take it for what it was and utilize it and move on. And I think a lot of it was, you know, very on point, just real tough, you know, kind of hard to take. But now I'm at this point where I'm basically, I have no way of getting any kind of real professional help without paying for it. So I'm at the point where I'm pretty much willing to go to a professional editor. And, you know, I just really, I know what my friends think of it, and I know what my family thinks of it. And you're right. That's not the, you know, that those people aren't going to be able to edit properly. I've had some pretty people that were pretty critical that I was kind of hoping that they would give me more of like advice of, you know, they told me what was wrong. But other than, yeah, I know I need to go to college and take me a grammar class. Thank you very much. they weren't, you know, very helpful as far as what to do, to change it, to make it better. Now I've worked on it. I've been working on the same book for 3 years straight. I've rewritten it 6 times. And I think it's pretty good now, but now that I'm on this 6th draft, I'm pretty much ready to go to a professional editor. And I just kind of wanted to know your opinion on that. Like, obviously, you know that editors advertise and sell their services. And do you have any advice on how to, I mean, I know you've already said get a college professor or a crony friend. That's, I mean, the closest thing I have to that is Richard, and he wasn't really interested in sitting down and editing my book. So Richard's my only smart friend. So I'm sorry, Jonathan.
I'm not an editor. I read for content. So I did do that.
He was very helpful. He was very, very helpful and a very big advocate.
I admit my drawbacks and my faults. Okay.
Look, I have nothing but advice. And so let me give you the breakdown on the world of editing. And this is just for kind of everybody so they know, too. So there's really almost in a way 4 different stages. So first, I don't know what you're holding up. Is that a little penis? What was that?
Jonathan just handed me his phone randomly, and it's a picture of a zombie, probably from The Walking Dead. And it says, "This guy just busted in your door. The object to your left is your only weapon. How screwed are you?" And I looked over to my left, and I held up this pink highlighter that April's been chewing on. It's not a penis.
It could have been. I'm getting shades of Eugene again from last night. Which, now that you brought up with The Walking Dead again, I'll get back to editing, but I think you need to get Mike Mundy on your show. Mike Mundy is my buddy from The Walking Dead, and he's been a zombie 7.5 times. When he says 7.5, I don't know what that half is, but
maybe he was half a zombie.
But he's absolutely wonderful, and I go to a lot of Comic Cons with him now, and he is just absolute freaking hoot. Love this man. Mike Mundy, love you.
If that's an offer, yeah, you tell him about us. We'd be glad to have him.
Fine. I'll hook you up. I'll hook you up when you can have a real Walking Dead actor on, and he'll tell you everything you want to know. He's really cool. This is the thing on editing, just so you know. So there's one thing when you go through and write, and you're editing yourself. So the first stage of editing is an alpha reader. An alpha reader, it can be a friend. It can be a friend who's a writer who reads your story to overall make sure your plot works, make sure your characters work, make sure the story is a good story. Light editing. They give it back
that guy,
to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. You go through it again. When you're done, now it goes to beta reader. A beta reader can be more than one person. They're just reading the story to make sure they all enjoy the story. Is it a good story or not? It's kind of like an alpha reader, but an alpha reader was telling you, hey, continuity. This character wasn't working. You needed to change it out. There was a hole here. Beta readers don't do that. Beta readers are just reading to tell you that they like the story, they don't like the story, and overall, here's my critique. Then it goes to a copy editor. Copy editor, right? Because I want you to do a copy editor, and I want you to do a line editor, and to understand the difference between the two before it goes to a freaking final editor, right? This is 5 different human beings that are looking at your freaking story. Copy editor's going to make sure that your grammar's good. And when you're writing a story, I don't want you to worry about your freaking grammar, whether you're good or not. It doesn't matter. Your editors are going to catch that. This is why a writer is only as good as their editor. So a copy editor is going to catch all your typos, all the tenses. Line editor is going to go in. You ask, son of a bitch, you're going to get it. Look, your line editor goes in there, reads each of your little lines to make sure every question that they're in there, everything was possibly answered, is now answered. And your world craft is wonderful. And now you have an A+. So now when you go back through it after the line editor, it goes to the final editor. The final editor, like DC McGannon, will come in, who is God, and will read it one more time to finally edit. And when he does, I will kind of peruse it, but I don't read it. And when my books go to print after DC McGannon has touched them, since he's God, I'm not going back and looking at it again. But so then how do you get a good editor? So a good editor should cost, honestly, between $500 to $5,000. And believe me, I've been to both gambits, all right? I paid $5,000 and it wasn't a good screw, all right? I didn't enjoy it at all. So there are agencies that you can go to that are editing groups that can edit. So pay them $500, see how they do, whether you like it. The thing about editors is that you've got to find an editor that believes in you as a writer, that can find your voice as a writer. So you yourself, your writing style as a writer, when you're done writing and all the editors have, you know, pigeons pecking at the damn thing and you've gone back in and edited, your writing style, your voice in which you're telling the story comes out at the very end. So, Lenny, so you yourself, so you're worried about your grammar and your lack of knowing this and the other. That's not your problem as the author. You don't need to know that crap. Your editor needs to know it. And it's your final editor that will make sure at the end that your voice is so beautiful when that story's being told and someone picks up your book and suddenly is reading it and they just read four chapters and they're done within 4 hours. That's when your writing style comes out. It's not something that you can perfect. I'm working on chapter one and I've been writing it for 5 months now. Stop it. Write the entire book, and you just comb through until it's finally right, and then you go through alpha, beta, copy, line, final. 5 different editors. How you pay for it, I don't know. Good editors are writers. Writers that, hey, you edit my book, I'll edit your book, right? And then never be upset or offended by what someone says if they don't like it or if they've got a change they want you to make. You always take the bad criticism, whether it's like, you suck, I hate you. Well, I wonder why they hate you. I hate you because I didn't like Cadence. She didn't have enough bosom showing for me. Take whatever someone tells you that they don't like about it, but make them tell you why they hate it, and then use that in a positive fashion to be a better writer, because that's all you want, is to be better. There you have it from God. I've told you all. Go on and write. Write your stories.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, DC, his initial stood for, I'm the damn chairman. I say when it's good.
Oh, my God. DC will bust your balls. I've landed in a wonderful world where I've got 3 different editors now, where one is making sure continuity works. One works solely on Worldcraft. And I can't tell you, Worldcraft is so important. So what is she talking about? Worldcraft. Watch Worldcraft. Well, which is Worldcraft? In Morbid Hearts, it's a zombie apocalypse. You got kids up on Pike's Peak fighting some zombies. At the end, I gave a hint that there's some vampires around.
Yep.
Well, okay. So when book 2 opens up, I've got my kids already finding out the vampires are there. They've been there a while. And what is that like now that the vampires have been there a while and you didn't know that they were there? Worldcraft is everything. If you can't create a wonderful world and explain what's going on from your character's point of view, not the author's, you don't have a good story. But Worldcraft is everything. And so then how do you get to that point? How do I get to Worldcraft? You give some brief description of what your character sees, and then everything else is in action. What's actually happening in the story and in dialogue. Dialogue is how we find out what your character's like, where he came from, what's he going to do. You don't have paragraph after paragraph of what happened and the blah, blah disease, right? It's it's action. Get to the action, tell the story, and then have it in dialogue. And that's how you get all the background information. And now all of you should be able to write a best-selling novel now. Go, write.
Not this
so
person.
See, that's how you do it.
I've been told by the higher powers that I do not need to write. I've written 3 short stories, 1 novel, partway through another novel, and I've had to rewrite them twice. And each time the files have corrupted, my backups have corrupted. So I take that as a hint that I'm not supposed to be a writer, so I don't.
It's
do
just incredibly
anymore.
Bad luck.
So now I'm doing a podcast, which I love and enjoy. So hey,
you know what?
This is meant to be this way.
Richard, try it one more time. You know, writers forget this too. Writers think that I have to be published right now. You know, oh my God, I'm 30 years old. My book must be published now. So I'll just tell you right now. I'll just tell you. I got published and published when I was 50 years old, right? I'm an old gal. You don't have to be published right now. You're gonna you want to hone your craft.
Jonathan.
Shut up, Jonathan. And I look hot. I look 38, don't I?
You look young. You do not look what you just said.
I know. I don't.
You're very beautiful, Suzanne.
Imagine how hot I'll be when I'm 60 years old, and you'll be thinking, "Will she go out with me? Maybe." But just so you know. But the whole point of when you're going to be a writer, you're going to write your entire life, right? You don't have to be published today. I would hope in 20 years from now, you'd still have the same enthusiasm and love for writing. So we all don't get to be published today. Right now, it's Susie Lambden time. Susie Lambden's going to be the big name. You guys will get to be next year. So take your time, work on your project, get it edited, make sure it is a good story, and then get it published. There's no rush. We're not in a race here. And in the library of the world, there's room for everybody to be on the bookshelf. Just make sure when you publish it, it's good.
You clear
so someone
the
doesn't
shelves.
Come. Well, you don't have to hear about it. You had 15 errors in your book, and I didn't like it. Okay, well, you know what? Screw you.
Yeah.
So. I just say go into the bookstore, clear the shelves, put your book on, say, hey, there you go.
I'm glad you went into all that stuff about the important differences between the types of editors, because I've been doing, like I said, from a background of knowing nothing about any of this, and I've just kind of went online and looked, and I thought I found a guy that he's advertised online editing service. There's a bunch of them. And I was going through them, and this guy was the only one at the price range that I was like, you know, they're all way, way out of my price range. I'm fortunate enough that somebody's planning on, hopefully, fingers crossed, he's reading it right now, going to help me go through an editor and actually get it professionally edited. But the guy wanted to read my work before he would quote me a price, and that's why I decided to go with this one. And I wanted to, and whenever he wrote back to me and we talked on the phone, you know, he wouldn't tell me how much it would cost to edit my work until he got a sample of it. And so I sent him
you want to know why that is? Do you want to know why that is?
Well, I hope it's because he's only going to take people that he thinks are going to actually succeed.
Well, and that's true. And too, editors, right, they get bored like anybody else, and the book sucks so bad and is so boring, they don't want to spend time, right? So if he took you on, then obviously you've got a voice out there that he can groom.
Yeah, and I just like the fact that I wanted to get kind of, I know that, I figured you'd probably been down this street before. You seem like somebody that's very learned in these things, and I just kind of wanted to fill it out before I invested somebody else's money in something that might be kind of a scam, because I don't have time for that. I know you say that I have all the time in the world, but I do not. I mean, I'm like the most impoverished person you will ever meet. Like, I do not have time to tie my shoes. Like, I really cannot waste any money on it. Especially it's not my money. Like, I'm fortunate that one person has been like, okay, well, I've got a little bit of money and I'm going to help you out. Now, I say I'm fortunate he hasn't actually helped me out yet, but, you know, I think it's coming, so I'm kind of still riding that wave, and I just was really nervous. I was like, I hope that this isn't just some sort of, you know, kind of dupe thing, and that this is not how it's done. But the things that he described that he was going to do, and the things that you told me needed to be done, and especially not only the point about him reading it first, getting an idea of what it was like first, but also he said that he highly recommended a final editor once he was finished doing his job. And the fact that you came back and said the same thing, that made me feel very good, because I feel like I've already been through the alpha readers and beta readers not properly, Suzanne.
That's
I did
right.
not do it right. I want them to put this on my tombstone. I didn't do any of it right. I did it all my way, but I'm going to get it done anyway. But yeah, I want it with the editing. Like, I've been through it. Like, what I told this editor, I don't want to say his name because I don't know if I'm going to use
it. No, don't say it. Don't say it.
If I do use him, I'll say it. But I don't know. What I told this editor was that I wanted to. Oh God, I lost it. Damn it.
I want to fill you up. No,
that was not it. What was I talking about? Oh my God.
I want to get this book done no matter what. Come on.
That wasn't it either. You guys are jerks. You're making it harder to remember what I was trying to say, so now I've lost it. I'll remember in 5 minutes.
We're talking about
editing and then spending money, whether or not you should spend the money.
Oh yeah,
on the editor.
Before I went and spent this friend of mine's and money, because like I say, it's absolutely not my money, and that's my fear, is that I'm going to spend it wrong, and then I'm never going to get that opportunity again. Because like you know, I've taken my book probably to, it's been in a couple contests. I hate contests. I'm with you. Screw contests. It's been in a couple parts of it have been in a couple contests. Like I said, I put it on Facebook, developed a tiny little following with a few people there, very randomly. And I don't think anyone even, that was a long time ago that it was on Facebook, but I've went, like I said, Richard's read it. I've had a few other people read it. I feel like I've been through the alpha and beta readers. I found it. What I told the editor was I have done it to the limit of my ability. Somebody might be able to make it better, but it's not me, you know, and like, it doesn't matter like how minute the changes need to be at this point or how big, I can't change it anymore. Like literally it has sapped me dry. Like for this story, now I'm ready to go on. I'm already kind of, working on in my head another story that I'm actually going to rewrite from something I wrote when I really didn't know what I was doing, but I think it's going to be a really great story, so I'm really excited about that. But yeah, I just kind of wanted to fill that out, and I feel really good about what you said, because it makes me feel like, you know, the kind of editor I'm looking for is what I need at this point. And yeah, I'm not feeling like I'm going to be able to publish anytime in the immediate future, but I feel like that I'm ready to go to a professional editor, and I hopefully that gets me what I need as far as being ready.
Well, I'll tell you this real quick too, and networking is everything. Even people that go to a Comic Con, if you're a writer and you can approach me, because I'm friendly and I'm nice and I love to talk, so I'll tell you exactly what to do. But don't be afraid to approach an indie author. The big publishing house authors, they're a little bit snooty, and believe me, I've talked to them. And but go to an independent author, and ask them. Right? They'll know. They can suggest what editor to go to. Most people that are independent authors are more than happy to help you network. And everything about being a published author is networking. And when they say it's not what you know, it's who you know, and the blah blah, it's really both. But get out there and ask people. Hey, who do you use as an editor? Who would you recommend? Get feedback. Who do you publish through? Yourself, independent author. Who do you, because it's just not createspace@amazon.com. There are a lot of small publishing houses that you can go through. So ask, be inquisitive, take notes, and don't be afraid to do that. If you can make it a friendship, Lenny, I'm kind of liking you. If I can help you, I'm more than happy to spread little seeds upon you. But that's what you want to do as a writer, right? And you want to get out there and you slowly build. And you slowly build your empire until one day, you have a zombie apocalypse and you eat everybody on the planet and you feel good about it.
Right on. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I think Richard's fixing to reel us in again.
Yeah,
he's got that look on his. He's got that look on his face.
I do. Look.
Very well. I do. It is 9:06. Yes. We're time.
We're closing on our second hour.
Okay.
If you're willing, you want to stick around for a little bit longer and do a BS session with us?
Dude, I can hang out some more.
It's just like this short
will
thing
Kevin
we like to do
us?
Where we talk about whatever.
Well,
all right, fine. We'll talk about. All right, give me a few minutes breaks and then we'll go back to it.
All right, me too.
Right, yeah.
And then we're getting Mike Mundy on your show.
There all we right, go.
That would be awesome.
You'll love him.
Are you liking me?
I love you so much, and you dress like Superman. Who doesn't love that?
Who doesn't, right?
Everybody I hope likes you beat John. Batman's
I
ass.
I don't know what his problem is. Everybody likes him.
All right,
we're team okay. Batman over yeah. here.
Right. Good. All right, so we'll be back in a minute.
Yes.
All right, yeah, for sure. All right.
Okay.
All right, and we've been visiting with Suzanne Landon, the author of the Dead Hearts series. Her latest book is Divine Hearts. We've been having fun with her. We're going to continue on with a BS session with her after this, so stay tuned for that in the weeks to come. We're having fun. Hope you guys are having fun listening. Y'all have a good one out there. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
just a lonely zombie. I'm just a lonely zombie in this hallway, wishing I could eat some brains, some brains. I'm just a lonely zombie.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.